Yes, welcome back to the show here on World Football Daily. And I'm delighted to say that we are being joined, as we said before the break, by a man who writes for 442, ESPN, The Guardian and The New York Times. It is, of course, Christian Henage joining us on World Football Daily today. Christian, how are you doing, my man?
I'm very good, thank you, mate. How are you?
I'm very well. Happy Valentine's Day to you. First and foremost, what are you doing this evening? I'm assuming you're going to have, you know, a lady on each arm this evening over dinner.
Sadly not. I'm spending my evening at a wholly different reception with Newcastle and Metalist Kharkiv instead.
Ah, will love be in the air, do you think, there tonight? Do you think a little touch of Paris in Newcastle will be giving Pardew a little bit of romance with the Europa League once again?
There's a joke about Brazilian being on show, but I don't really feel too comfortable making that one.
I wouldn't worry about it, Christian, but maybe if you want to throw it in at the end, we can always edit it out if it's too crude. No worries about it, mate, no worries. Let's start then with a little bit of Europa League action tonight before we look back at last night's incredible Champions League games. And let's take a look at Newcastle. Is there a pressure, do you think, with the rise in form recently in the Premier League, is there a pressure for them to do well now in the knockout stages of this tournament?
I think, given that they haven't got a game at the weekend, there's a definite pressure to put the best team out. I mean, Guardiola's been quite obvious in saying that he will do that, and I think he has to, because they crashed out of the cup quite embarrassingly to Brighton. Mm. And more meekly as well, I think, was the concerning element, rather than it was against Championship opposition. I think for them, though, they also will be consciously aware of Metalist as a side. They're not, by any stretch, an unprofessional outfit. This is a very good side. This is a team that topped their group, that bested Leverkusen, and has a wealth of Brazilian talent in there, mixed obviously with some more domestic players. And as a consequence of that, there's no shame getting beaten them, but I think they'll also want to do well.
If they will obviously want to keep a clean sheet and deny Metalist from getting that vital away goal. What's an acceptable result tonight, do you think, for Newcastle at St Andrews this evening?
I think an acceptable result is possibly any victory with a goal. I think they might even take a draw. It's one of those situations where you kind of have to cast it off with the thought that if you can get that draw in the home leg and keep their scoring down, maybe even take a 0-0, then you go to the away leg knowing that for every goal you score, it essentially counts as two. And so it with someone like Pardew, who, without wanting to criticise him, has been defensive in the past and has been quite keen to kill games rather than push on with them, I think if it gets to that midway through in the second half and it's still at a deadlock, I think he'd be quite content with that.
Do you see Newcastle going hell for leather at all tonight, especially in the early goings, to try and suppress Kharkiv early on? And I will say that it was St James's Park and not St Andrews where they're playing tonight, before we carry on.
It's been called far worse than that, trust me. I think you're right in that sense. I mean, you know, if we look down at Southampton with Pochettino, often offence or a high pressing line can be the best form of defence because it can breed mistakes and afford you chances. If Hatem Ben Arfa was there, I think they'd be more inclined to go hell for leather, because he's one of those players that likes to dribble, that likes to build his game around the exciting moments. Without him there's a little less precedence on doing that. Sissoko has a similar skill, but it's more from his just athleticism than brilliant dribbling. I think there'll be possibly a slight trepid start to the game. It'll perhaps be well built up atmospherically, but it'll also be a little bit shy from the players because they don't really know, I think, what they're facing. There is a definite aura around Metalist that breeds mystique, because while we can see results, it's difficult to know a great deal about them because they haven't played since early December. I mean, they did play a friendly against Whitby Bay on Sunday, which, for all intents and purposes, I think was just something of a warm-up for them. It was just to keep the legs going rather than anything too intense.
I don't know. I'm sure Whitby Bay are a very difficult side to take on, Christian. The reigning European champions are, of course, now in the sister tournament, the Europa League. Chelsea taking on Sparta Prague. With them being out of the title race, do you expect them to treat the Europa League far more seriously than say, Manchester City and other teams have done in the past?
Why not? I think it makes sense to. If we're all assuming that they're out of the title race, which I think Benitez has, he said that he thinks they can finish third, which to me speaks to a man who doesn't believe he's in there for the big fight, then I think the Europa League has to take precedent. And importantly, while it may not have the, you know, the prestige of the Champions League, it's still an awesome tournament to win. I think it's still something that further solidifies your reputation in Europe, with which I think Chelsea will probably admit that they've been lacking for some time now. And it seems to be something, at least with Abramovich, that he wants to forge. He wants Chelsea to be big on that European stage.
Who needs it more, Chelsea Football Club or Rafa Benitez, in terms of coming out of this Chelsea job with a piece of silverware and putting himself back on the managerial market?
Well, I think it's difficult, because he came out of his time with Inter Milan with a piece of silverware. And while it perhaps negated some of the issues, I think much like his time at Inter, a lot of the problems aren't really his doing. At Inter, it was the fact he was given a squad that was perhaps too old and pretty much had passed its peak just as Mourinho had left. At Chelsea, there was more issues to deal with phasing out those older players, players like John Terry and Frank Lampard, who he's now not only had to work with, but then consistently had to field questions about, will Frank Lampard be there next year? Will he be offered a contract? I mean, he doesn't know. And it's I was at the press conference after the Newcastle-Chelsea game, and I felt genuine sympathy for the man, because he had no idea realistically whether Lampard would be offered a contract, and yet he was asked the same question in three different ways, one after another. And while it made him look bad to give the same answer, there was no other answer he could give. And I think if he can win the Europa League, it would be amazing. But I just, perhaps it's, you know, it's the sympathy that it stems from, but I do feel as if he's a good thing for Chelsea. He's got Torres playing very well. He knows how to build those three playmakers behind him and get them feeding into that conduit. And he now has someone in Demba Ba who provides backup to that if it goes wrong. I just think that, you know, sometimes we take these situations and we put too much of a subjective hue on them, and we need to look at essentially what the manager's achieving rather than who he is as a person.
What are the dangers for Chelsea in this game? Is it complacency against the Sparta Prague side, or is it over-enthusiasm to get forward tonight away from home? What do they need to be wary of this evening?
I think missing the flight is probably the biggest concern. I don't want to sound too disrespectful to Sparta Prague, because they obviously they have a huge standing in the context of Czech football. But I think for them, the concern, as you rightly say, is complacency. It's that belief that you're entering this game with too much of, not confidence, more arrogance, that you can best these opponents. Treat it, I would argue, in the same way they treat the away trip to Nordjylland. Appreciate that this team have obviously done something in their domestic league to get to this competition. They haven't been picked out of a hat or won a tombola, and accordingly they deserve a level of respect, but also, you know, purge forward with that belief that you're the better side, right? And that accordingly you have the quality to best them.
The other English sides are taking on Zenit St. Petersburg is Liverpool, and of course we've got Tottenham against Lyon as well later on this evening in one of the late Europa League games. This is a Lyon side that's been struggling in the last few weeks, while Tottenham have been, I think it's undefeated in the last 11 games in England that they've played so far, aside from that FA Cup defeat obviously against Leeds. This is the time for Tottenham to strike, surely.
Yeah, exactly. Lyon are in a real tough situation at the minute. They're not performing, to put it very simply, and it's a surprise to see such a fall from a team that as recently as the last decade we were seeing as being synonymous with the last 16 and playing some beautiful football with the likes of Juninho Pernambucano and Sidney Govou and these players. And I think that because of that, it's a perfect time, as you say, for Tottenham to strike. It's a good chance for them as well to establish themselves where they perceive they should be, in that top four and challenging for that top four. If you can best a side like Lyon, irrespective of whether they're at a low ebb, it's a significant scalp on their resume. And I think they have the kind of players in Lennon and Bale with the pace and the direct nature that will cause trouble to the back line of Lyon. It's a weakness they've had, and obviously, you know, the fact they were able to surprise Hugo Lloris away from that club probably also gives you some indication of the fact that Tottenham's standing in Europe is rising, because I don't think that deal was purely pushed through because of the financials of it. I think it was done because Lloris saw Tottenham as a project that he could grow with.
Are they a side, with AVB's love of the Europa League? Are they a side that you would put down as favourites for this tournament this season?
It's difficult because then I see Angie and I see the wealth of talent they possess. I think it would be wrong to think of Tottenham as not being within that top four without question. They're not just because of the wealth of talent they have and the depth and such, right? But it's because, as you say, the gravitas with which Andre Villas-Boas affords this tournament. It's obviously the one that helped establish his early career with Porto. So the chance to win it at another club, the chance to, again, I would imagine, prove some of his detractors wrong, is of huge appeal to him. And given that the tournament, while possessing some really impressive sides, is perhaps not at its best competition level compared to previous seasons, I would say it's a great chance for him to do that.
Just finally, Christian, before we get on to last night's Champions League games, Bayer Leverkusen against Benfica as well, a tie that might, for the neutral fans, be going under the radar slightly, but Benfica unbeaten this season, and Leverkusen only a point off second place in the Bundesliga behind Dortmund. This is an absolute European thrill fest we've got on our hands this evening.
It is. I mean, Benfica have, you know, an amazing history in European football, going back to the days of Eusebio, and then more recently the likes of Rui Costa, and even more recently than that, you have players like Aymar and Cardoza, who, while perhaps not of the same level as those players I mentioned previously, are still in very impressive players. And I think for Benfica, Portuguese football in general takes this competition very seriously, and they see it as a brilliant route to perhaps prove that while their domestic league is not one of the top in the continent, they still have teams that are the top within the continent. And for Leverkusen, they're a funny team. I mean, my first exposure to them was when they were bested by Newcastle, and I didn't see a lot there, but having seen them recently against Mönchengladbach, I was very impressed with what I saw. I think that they're a side that have a lot of talent that's mixed, I think, with domestic players and then some more foreign, and accordingly, I would say this tie has a lot of potential for goals and, more importantly, excitement.
There was plenty of goals and excitement in the Ukraine last night. Shakhtar taking on Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League round of 16 knockout stage. Were you expecting such an enthralling game from these two sides? Because we've seen them play fantastically, but again, all the attention was on Madrid against Manchester United last night.
It was. This was something of the hipster tie in many ways. It was the one that not many people were watching, which is a shame because I thought it was a brilliant game. I was expecting it to feel more almost continental in terms of having quite beautiful passing interchanges, yet it felt more like an English tie almost. It felt quite direct. There was lots of long balls. I mean, Douglas Costa's goal was a prime example of the kind of thing I'm talking about. You know, I'm still amazed that Hummels messed that up because he is a wonderful defender, yet he will not be pleased with how his evening went last night. I think despite that, there was enough in there to show you that there'll be more goals in the second leg. I just think that a lot of them will come for Dortmund. For all Shakhtar's ability to get to last night, they didn't really trouble Dortmund for most of the game, which might sound weird given that they did score two, but I just think in Dortmund it was more the fact they underperformed than Shakhtar besting them that got the draw last night. And I think as a consequence you'll see a stark improvement from Dortmund in the second leg.
Did you feel that they were missing Willian last night, Shakhtar? Did you feel his presence? There was an absence there in the middle of the park.
Willian is a fantastic player. There's a reason he went for the figure that he did. But you know, you have to credit Shakhtar. They weren't, you know, idiots in terms of they were quick to move for Tyson of Metalist to come in. Now, I don't think he's quite at Willian's level, but he's still an amazing player. And equally, they have more than enough talent within that rank, obviously the majority of which are Brazilian and then one Armenian, who I'm not going to try and stumble across his name. But the point is that I think it's somewhat disingenuous to label all the best of their play on Willian, because I think it takes a unit to achieve that. And there are a number of immensely talented attacking players. Douglas Costa is probably one of the best ones, and I think for them, they've been able to replace Willian, as I said, and not really lose a significant drop in terms of the performance of the attacking front line.
You mentioned Matt Hummels and the mistake leading into Douglas Costa's goal. What did you make of the back four in general? How much are they missing Subotic? We spoke about this yesterday and today on the show slightly, but it does look very disorganised at the back for Dortmund without it.
It does. That's that goes without saying. I mean, you know, Shakhtar's coach said that his defenders defended like children, which I thought was quite funny. But equally, Dortmund themselves will not be too pleased with how things went. I think what you have to remember is that Dortmund have had quite a consistent sort of back five. And as a consequence of that, that breeds an understanding that can sometimes almost be unspoken, that players know where their teammates are going to be. And when you disrupt that, as we've seen with countless sides, Man United being one, for example, you can cause problems that weren't there previously. It's not necessarily to do with talent. It's just to do with that built-in understanding that they forged. And I think that it's not fair to probably label all that good work on Subotic alone, just as we wouldn't with Willian. But Hummels will, as I said, be more than keen to pick up on receiving a goal like he did for Douglas Costa. It was not his finest hour in yellow.
Are you pipping Dortmund to go back home and dominate the second leg of this tie, or do you think Shakhtar have done enough to show and to throw their weight about enough that they've got a very good chance in this?
I just think that there will be a reaction from Dortmund. Equally, the backing that they get at home is an experience that I think every football fan needs to sample at some point. You see it on television, it's wonderful, so imagine what it's like in the stadium. And you put players in there who've underperformed, I think the crowd will react the right way, and accordingly, you'll see Dortmund come out of that, I would say, quite comfortably, possibly 2, maybe even 3-1.
What about in the other tie last night? Who stands on firmer ground out of Real Madrid and Manchester United right now after yesterday evening's performances?
I think Ronaldo stands on the firmest ground, given his jump.
He stands on Patrice Evra, doesn't he?
Amazing. I think it was Alex Ferguson who said his kneecap is almost level with Patrice Evra's head. He is the Michael Jordan of football or soccer in many different ways, and I think that was one of them. For me, though, the result is one I think that Mourinho will be happy with. I mean, he was never going to say he was disappointed with the result, because that's not how he operates, although he was quite content to criticise Sergio Ramos for Danny Welbeck's goal, which I would imagine will only further their wonderful relationship that they have nurtured during his time in Madrid. But importantly for them, I think he will know that Manchester United at home have been quite porous. They've conceded recently against Southampton, who admittedly played fantastically and completely deserved that goal. But still, it was a mistake that is the kind of thing that Real will pounce on. I think Madrid are also quite aware that they won't have faced, or they being Manchester United, won't have faced a side of their quality at Old Trafford this season. I think Ferguson said that Southampton were the best team he's faced, which I think is an immense credit to Mauricio Pochettino. But still, it's the quality of Madrid. Ozil, I think, has been a little bit indifferent. I'm not overly been impressed with him of late, but I think in De Maria and even Alonso, you have players there who will pounce on mistakes. And I think that, as we said previously, if you can get that away goal in the second leg and best what your opponent was able to do at your stadium, it counts as 2. And because of that, I think I would not be surprised if Madrid go into that game looking to attack from the off and throwing somewhat more caution to the wind than last time, because last night I think they struggled on the counter-attack, man. You didn't really let them do that. And I think that you saw offensively stout performance from Man United, in part due to David De Gea, who I think, you know, while he may have began his career as a petty larcenist stealing donuts, he's now become an amazing, well, shot stopper, which he always was, but one that can be relied on in slightly bigger occasions as he starts to grow into that role. And obviously it'll mean more for him being not only Madrid-born but an Atletico graduate to best Madrid at the Bernabeu. And I think if he can carry that form into the next leg, then there's every chance Man United could come through.
I'm sure it will be an absolutely thrilling second leg at Old Trafford, and of course in Dortmund as well. Christian, it's an absolute pleasure to have you back on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us. I know we've taken up far too much of your time. You're a very busy man indeed, but we always love getting you back on the WFD airways whenever we can, mate.
Always a pleasure, never a chore.
We appreciate that, man. Thank you very much for joining us, mate. Christian Hennage joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Champions League and Europa League as we get ready for the knockout round of 32 in Europe's sister tournament. And you can follow Christian as he follows world football at K Hennage, capital K, capital H-E-N-E-A-G-E on Twitter. That's capital K, capital H-E-N-E-A-G-E on Twitter. Christian, their top man to get on WFD
Europa League. Hashtag Europa League. It's trending worldwide, man. I'm really excited to see that on a day like Valentine's Day, man. Again, I could really care less about Valentine's Day. Unless it gets me something in the end.
Does your wife listen to the show, Raph? Does Brittany?
Doesn't, you know?
No?
Yeah, I don't know. I really hope she doesn't. I was just thinking about this, actually, while you were talking to Kristen. I was thinking I might have to edit down some of that intro
I wouldn't worry about it. Well, you said that she was a lovely woman, a very proper woman. And, you know, you got her some nice underwear. It's all that matters. Rafa doing a sterling job on Valentine's Day. Kristen coming on and doing a sterling job on World Football Daily's Europa League Day. It is Thursday's show. We're going to be right back in just a sec on the show as we get ready to look back a little bit more of Real Madrid against Manchester United from yesterday.